The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the Isle of Man's main Net Zero Progress website.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Lots to talk about today. Obviously, issues in the news. Rob Callister being sacked as health minister. Claire Barber going in to run the meat plant. Tim Johnson's been talking about the state of Manx agriculture. And we got another bank holiday next year. Monday, May the 8th. It's going to be a bank holiday to mark the King's coronation. Now, the King gets coronated on Saturday the 6th of May, so the bank holiday falling on Monday the 8th of May. The announcement mirrors the decision made by the UK government in creating a long weekend to mark the celebrations. Circle the date in your diary. Monday the 8th of May is a bank holiday next year, so do take care in the weather. Let's hope everything is fine today. And Julian's with us on Man in Line. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Just wanted to talk a couple of different things. First, about the Morecambe and Morgan wind farm and a bit of geothermal. A quick question, though. The Isle of Man meat plant report by five UK-based consultants seems to have been revealed in a very timely manner. Just like to know where the swimming pool report is after all this time. If they can do the meat plant one in a couple of months, where's the swimming pool one?
Down the queue, I would imagine.
I know.
It's at the back of the queue. Well, we can, put it this way, there's a lot of money going into the meat plant, so I suppose it depends where the priorities lay. But certainly it's weird that nothing's happened with the swimming pool report.
Yeah, I know. It is odd. Perhaps somebody can get it at a meeting at Tynwald or something, can ask the question. Yeah, the Morecambe and Morgan wind farms, the proposed wind farms, the Morecambe one is up to 40 large turbine array, but this is part of three of them, because the one that's not being mentioned is the Mona one, which is the huge, the Morgan is going to be about 300 square kilometres, and the Mona one to the southeast of it is 500 square kilometres, which together are going to make 2,000 920 foot high turbines. But the Morecambe one is, it looks like it's going to be to the east of the gap, so it looks like that's going to exacerbate the ship navigation problem even more, because you've got two huge ones going sort of north from the northwest to the southeast, and then you've got one in the gap there to the right that's going to be nearer to the coast. So it's going to be interesting to sort of, you know, navigate your way around that.
Well, you would have thought that they'd have done consultations already. I mean, the Port of Liverpool is not what it used to be, but there's a lot of container traffic goes in there. I know Tesco have a big wine. A lot of Tesco wine is down the old Manchester Ship Canal, and that comes in there. So quite a bit of traffic. And, of course, there's lots of ferries that go to and fro. There's, you know, Belfast ferry that goes. So there is stuff going in and out of the Mersey, but just nowhere near as much as they used to be. So you would have thought that they've mitigated all risk where that's concerned.
Although, of course, if you've got to make them go further, they're all running on diesel. So if there's less of them, they're all going to be running longer to go around all the...
Well, there is that, of course, yes.
Now, in concert with that, there's an interesting news report. I don't know if it's been mentioned on the Man in Line about Sark. Ørsted, the company that puts in the wind farms, they're offering assistance to Sark to cull its local rodent population to compensate for possible future disturbances to seabirds on their migratory route caused by the new Hornsea 4 wind farm that's going to be off the Yorkshire coast near Flamborough Head. And the seabirds that are going to be affected, apparently, are puffins, guillemots and razorbills, which are basically a lot of the ones that we get here. But the fact that Ørsted are offering to help cull the rodent population on Sark to help with the bird population as a result of disturbances, whatever that means, was that bird strikes, at their Yorkshire as they're migrating south towards the Channel Islands, appears to be an admission by Ørsted that there is a problem with turbine and bird interactions.
Well, I think it's, I mean, it's fairly well documented now that... the wind turbines can absolutely decimate populations. It's travelling at that speed, at the end of the turbine, it's going at about 100 kilometres an hour. Nobody seems to be standing up for the poor old birds.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And, you know, if we're going to be, you know, looking after the earth, you have to think about all the and of course you're messing with the ecology again, so you know there's always unforeseen things when you start playing with all the components. Well, we'll get rid of these ones and then who knows what will happen in the future.
So just tell me again, what's Sark got to do with Yorkshire?
The fact that the migratory bird route goes right down the east coast of the UK, because, of course, a lot of them go down to the National Trust bits in East Anglia. So they then continue on to Sark. So Sark's worried because it's quite a big bird, seabird population that nest there. So what they're wanting to do is, Ørsted are offering to get rid of the rodent population so that the eggs aren't as... eaten, you might say, yeah. Because they're anticipating problems with the amount of birds that are going to get through the new array, because there is a lot of large wind turbine arrays on that Anglian coast.
I've never heard anybody jumping up and down from the bird fraternity, from the Twitchers, the RSPB, or anybody else like that, saying, you know, this is going to give any sort of numbers, this is going to, you know, take away migrating birds, any percentage of migrating birds. So we don't actually know, and it's one of those things we won't know until perhaps it's too late.
Yeah, I mean, a simple search on the internet for Ørsted Sark and rodent or you know, that type of thing will come up with the news thing straight away, and you'll see what it's been talked about. Final thing I was going to mention was a recent cost analysis by the US Department of Energy has been looking at the levelized cost of different types of electrical generation. So right from the start, from, you know, building the thing to putting it in and all the gubbins, and so that they can see in the future what's worth gambling on, or, well, not gambling on, but investing in to do for the future. And what's interesting is, and this is not necessarily looking at how the intermittent nature of it, like it's not always windy and so, and, you know, the solar with the sun at nighttime and things. The levelized cost per megawatt hour in US dollars, because they've been going longer than we have with this type of thing, worked out at $103 per megawatt hour, so 103. Solar worked out at about $74 per megawatt hour. Onshore wind worked out at 56. But the cheapest and also the most available at almost 100% was $44, which is less than coal or gas, and that's geothermal, which is interesting because the US has been investing quite a lot into geothermal in more recent years to have that base load. So there's always the availability of power for all the heavy stuff because, you know, things like charging batteries and phones. Even cars, sort of, you know, when you start having to sort of have aluminium smelting plants that take about three cities worth of electricity when they're on, to get the heat up to do all this kind of thing. But what's interesting is when you look at history, if you look at in Tuscany in Italy, there's a little town called Lardarello, and they did the first geothermal generator. That was in 1904. They then did a larger capacity one, which was about 250,000 watts worth of power in 1913. And today they've got 34 geothermal plants in that area, which produces about 800 megawatts of power 24/7. So this little town is generating about eight times what Poolrose puts out if you were to stick Poolrose up to full power all the time. So if you compare those costs, like the 44 as compared to the wind, and the fact that it's running all the time, I mean, you're looking... I would imagine the costs get even lower when you think that the pipe that's going down and your actual energy source the lifespan of these things. I mean, these things are still going 100 years later. I mean, even the Southampton one that was put in, that's been 100% available for 36 years now, and total cost so far, $13 million on that one. But, you know, you have to, when you look talking about, because we are worried about money these days, geothermal, once that pipe's in, the costs diminish because you haven't got to renew the fuel for it. It just keeps going.
Seems weird the government here hasn't reached out to this or just even seemingly got interested in it. And you wonder why.
Well, some people are putting the dead hand on it, you might say, and say, oh, well, you know, the rocks probably aren't warm enough underneath. But the rule of thumb is, in the UK area, the geological survey found that for every 1,000 metres you go down, you gain 27 degrees Celsius, which is quite a bit. So I think they said that the difference between Southampton or Cornwall compared to the rest of the UK is something about 10 to 15 degrees. So all you got to do is dig a bit deeper, because the rule of thumb is every 1,000 metres you go down. So I think Cornwall and Southampton are somewhere around about between 3.5 and 5 kilometers down, but that Quaise Energy, the one that I think Graham mentioned, they're going down to 20 kilometers now. So if you've got 27 degrees for each kilometer, you've got a heck of a lot. I mean, if you were to go down 6 or 7 kilometers on the island, you probably have enough energy to generate a lot of electricity and heat for everybody.
Okay, all right. Appreciate that, Julian. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, cheers. 19 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. Harold dropped me a note in just to say this geothermal energy, you know, is nothing new. The Romans did it. The Romans used to tapped into hot springs in some of their baths. It's nothing new at all. And a note in from Lee, who says, I spent quite a bit of time in California, and they've got geothermal in California. There's a thing called, is it the Salton Sea? That sea, inland sea that's drying up. They've got it around there as well. I think it's what's the company called Pacific Gas and Electric, or DWP, I think it's called now, the Department of Water and Power in California, are quite big into geothermal energy. And yet, at the moment, it's been suggested it might work over here, but we've not really seen any traffic where that's concerned. But anyway, before Christmas, the chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board is going to be in. Friday the 2nd, in fact, is going to be. Daphne Kane, MHK, will be in chatting about it. Dear Andy, this is a note in from 222, who just said, pass my comments on to the minister. This is about the meat plant. The meat plant's been a lumbering out-of-control locomotive for years, which the minister has inherited. This is going to be Claire Barber, because she's going to be looking after it now. But she's the only one with enough guts to get in there and sort it out. It's been a standing joke in the farming community for years. I think this is an opinion, this from Texter 222, that it's been run inefficiently and unprofessionally at the meat plant. So it's time to get rid of the management and put somebody in who's going to sort it out. We'll see. OK, and apparently this is an opinion. It's an opinion from 222 just saying apparently that we've got 200 prime quality beef carcasses sitting at the meat plant that we can't sell. Well, we don't know that as a fact. That's just an opinion that's been sent in, but it's something that we'll obviously find out. But you may have heard Claire Barber on The Breakfast Show earlier on today. But the meat plant has simply got to be sorted out because things are not what they should be. We thought that was a big story. And then, less than 2 months after being appointed, Rob Callister, MHK, has been sacked as health minister. Enterprise Minister Laurie Hooper, who was health minister prior to Mr. Callister, is now taking on both roles. He's going to be enterprise minister and DHSC minister. The chief minister is in Blackpool at the moment at the British Irish Council with associated peers. And so we spoke to Mr. Cannon and just asked him why.
So let me be clear. You know, the government is facing significant challenges, including a post-COVID recovery, an energy pricing crisis, inflation and associated cost of living, an absolute need for a new economic vision for the island. And amongst those challenges is a significant and at times complex healthcare transformation programme, which is seeking to bring healthcare delivery and capability to the best possible comparable standards. And Now, unfortunately, on this occasion, I have had to make a decision that a different political and operational approach is required at this critical juncture with healthcare delivery. I want to thank Rob very much for everything that he has done and contributed. But unfortunately, at times you have to make these decisions, and it's in the best interests of moving the department forward for the time being that Laurie Hooper just comes back in and takes back some of the responsibilities he was managing before his move to the Department for Enterprise.
So just why is that operational and political change needed then? Just what has gone wrong here?
It's not so much what's gone wrong, but it's about driving the department forward in the right way. Rob Callister, as you know, is a dedicated politician who has served this administration particularly well, dealing with the return of the TT and the Manx Grand Prix, and as chairman of the Manx Utilities Authority, has been under significant pressure as gas prices have fluctuated significantly as a result primarily of Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And he has gone into the department wanting to take things forward, but sometimes you have to make an assessment that the skill set required, the learning required to take things forward, it's just not there at that particular juncture. And I think, you know, whilst I have to take some responsibility for that, nevertheless, you know, I also have to take responsibility for making sure that we deliver the transformation programme. And at this point, I feel that it is best after a number of discussions that Rob stands aside for the time being. I'm sure he'll be back in government, and I have every confidence, yeah, certainly in the interim, that Laurie Hooper will continue to take things forward.
This is, by my count, the sixth change to the Council of Ministers since May this year. Are you concerned by how much disruption there's been in the council?
I don't think there's that, actually. I mean, although there have been a number of changes, most of those have been brought on by circumstances outside necessarily of my control, particularly given the situation with David Ashford and Tim Crookle. So, no, look, I mean, council's getting on with the job. As I told you, you know, next week we're going to set out a clear economic vision for the future of this of the island. I think that's the right thing to do. It's ambitious and it's forward thinking. And as I mentioned to you right at the beginning of this interview, you know, we're also dealing with all these other challenges as well. And I think so far our track record is that we've dealt with the Ukraine crisis. We've dealt with the cost of living crisis. We are dealing with housing. We have 850 new houses planned, of which we expect 650 will be built. We've got new plans for the built environment reform. So I'm very confident that council is continuing to deliver. You know, and along the way, unfortunately, there's always going to be a risk of some shifts.
You mentioned a moment ago that when it comes to putting ministers in post, you have to bear some of the responsibility of that. Given that you have had some change over the last couple of months, do you worry about how this reflects on you and your decision making?
Look, I said to you, you know, I think the decision for David Ashford to stand down was his decision. That couldn't have been foreseen, and vis-a-vis with Tim Crookle. And I've just explained how council is dealing with all these significant challenges. And I perhaps need to reflect on this particular appointment and what's happened there. But as I said, you know, we're delivering, we're setting out the economic vision, and we're going to continue to push forward.
You mentioned, of course, as well, that Minister Hooper is now back in charge in health. When will you be looking at a permanent replacement there? Is he going to be permanently health minister and you get a new enterprise minister, or what's the plan there?
Well, I will just reflect on the situation at present, and I'll make an announcement as soon as possible.
That's the Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon, MHK, on how matters are in Manx politics subsequent to the sacking of Rob Callister as Health Minister. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just reading your internet news this morning, and heard it on the news, the fiasco at the meat plant. Now, you get conflicting stories here. In one instance, they say it's owned by a group, a party of farmers, but the headlines is that it's owned by the government. And the fact that is one of the things there, and it's dreadful that they're saying there's only 75% of the workforce turning in on a daily basis, and nothing's been done about it. If it had been private enterprise, they would have been, well, sacked. And the management, from what I'm listening to, the management seemed to be abysmal. There's nothing seems to be getting done. There's a fraction of the work going through it. And this is, according to your headlines there, it's government-owned. Now, is this a reflection on the people that in government who are in control of this? Now, I don't know about Clare Barber, but they need a major upturn in that place and empty half of the, or empty most of the senior management out and get new, properly qualified, proper people in there to run the meat plant. I remember years ago, and you probably remember it yourself, when British Leyland were in being, and I know one lad that used to work there, and he told me himself they had virtually double the work staff to cover, because they used to have a day and night shift, in a sense. They'd come in, but they'd go for a sleep, one part of the staff, and then the next night, the other lot, they'd swap about, so Leyland were employing virtually double the amount of staff they wanted. And we all know what happened to British Leyland. It sank, never to be seen again. Now, is this what's happening at the meat plant, and the government have been, all these years have been covering it up because of extremely bad management? And if it was private enterprise, they would have been emptied out a long time ago.
The meat plant, though, Howard, is pivotal to Manx agriculture. And it's funny that this is, peculiar now, that it's that this has come the same time that we've lost Ramsay Bakery, and it's putting the mills into question as well. Nobody knows really what's going to happen to the mill. They have intimated a lot of the flour will now go to export. But, I mean, without the meat plant, we'd be exporting live animals.
Well, we are exporting live animals. As I see wagons coming over here and taking them away. And they have done, well, for donkey's years. Because the farmers, and quite rightly so, are getting a better price. Or, as it says in your internet report, the news, there's something like 600 sheep instead of 3,000 sheep being processed. 60 cattle a week. You know, it's ridiculous. They should be sacked. That's it, full stop. And I know where I worked, we had an excellent, and I mean it was a good, sickness benefits. And people did abuse it. And the company had the wise move to put a single line in when they saw it was getting abused at the company's discretion. And that there then, it made them sit up and think, am I going to lose my job on this? But if you get in a cozy situation, which it seems, at the meat plant, and you go down to Tesco where the government virtually forced Tesco to take it, the prices there are double what the imported meat is, and people are not going to buy it. But with the management system, by the sounds of it, they're just sitting there and looking around and saying, well, what cock-up can I cause today? And it's never going to work. They're going to have to get in and cut it right down, root and branch, and sort the whole damn thing out, because it's the people, again, once again, are paying their taxes, who are subsidising laziness.
Well, the Isle of Man Meat, Company Limited, is they're equal shareholders. DEFA and the Fat Stock Marketing Association, which represents the suppliers, so DEFA and the Fat Stock Marketing Association are equal shareholders, and they've been responsible for the plant since, it's about 4 years, I think, since the last. You remember the last big sort out they were going to have.
Yeah.
But obviously something has gone wrong somewhere. Somebody's not talking to somebody. Somebody doesn't understand what somebody else wants. It just sounds like nobody is talking to anybody else and people are going their own merry, sweet way.
Yeah, it's again, it's government silo thinking, where they've all got their own little corners and they sit in them and they won't listen to anybody else. And when it was Agrimark, Henry, when it was the abattoir, and I'm talking about down in Lake Road, down opposite Tesco, where the old abattoir was, and then up to where the new one was built, one man that was in charge there was Henry Robinson. And he ran the place virtually military style. And Agrimark, in essence, is still going today, although it's up at the Cool. But they were up at Castle Hill. And, well, another one there, when they had the potato shortage, they brought in 200 ton of potatoes, and I think 150 ton of them got scrapped. That was an intervention. But Henry Robinson at the time, he organized Agrimark on behalf of the farmer community. He helped with the abattoir. But the people that's up there today just seem to be on a massive ego trip. And it's time they were emptied. Just get rid of them. That's all you can do. They are civil servants in a sense. If they're working for the government, they'll get a job somewhere else within government to save their fat pensions. But that's all they seem to be looking at. They're sitting on their hands, waiting for the retirement day to come to pick up a fat pension.
Well, we'll see what happens now. But obviously, I mean, the crunch is coming where the meat plant's concerned, Howard.
Well, the crunch should have come a few years ago. But they didn't. They just put another Mr. Blobby in. And this is what's happening. It's only come to roost now. It's coming home to roost, as you say. But it should have been sorted out years ago. The abattoir and the slaughterhouse and the meat processing plant are not new. But they've been in trouble for years. And all they do is another plaster on a big cut. And it's never going to work. They've got to get in and operate and get the people out that's sitting on the top that's not doing anything.
Okay. All right, Howard, we appreciate that.
Take care.
Thanks
Bye
for
now.
Calling today. Well, this is the story. An audit of the Isle of Man meat plants concluded the factory is well equipped with the ability to easily carry out the processes for which it's used, but some major challenges have got to be addressed. Now, Claire Barber, the Minister for Environment, Food and Agriculture, has basically looked at the whole thing, and she's taken the role as chair with immediate effect. She's chairwoman, and there's going to be a turnaround plan. Graham Crowe has been acting as interim chair since January. He's going to remain on the board as well. The meat plant manager has resigned his role. Four new non-exec directors have been appointed to find solutions as soon as possible. But something's going wrong at the meat plant. Something has been going wrong. And they are trying to get to the bottom of it. Well, let's hope they do. Let's certainly hope they do. I just want to read you Rob Callister's statement, by the way. Rob Callister has put a statement on his Facebook page, and he addresses it to the Onchan constituent. And Rob Callister says, I'll be making a more formal statement in due course, but at the moment I just need a little time to reflect on the events that have unfolded over the past couple of days. In the meantime, please accept my sincere apologies for any embarrassment that this announcement may have caused constituents. I know so many people genuinely felt I could have implemented the changes required to our health and social care services, but I just didn't get fair opportunity to implement the changes. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who wrote to me over the past 5 weeks requesting help or support from the department and from Manx Care. To say this announcement has broken me is an understatement, but Manx politics can be extremely difficult and unfair at times, but we fully understand and accept the rules when we stand for election. Take care, Rob Callister. That's Rob Callister's statement on Facebook. Now, I have to tell you, Rob Callister's due on Man in Line on Monday. It was planned quite a while ago. Rob Callister was coming in on Monday in his role as Minister for Health and Social Care. And certainly the invitation is still open for Rob Callister to appear on Man in Line on Monday. Obviously, as an Onchan MHK and as a backbencher, by all means. So, Rob, if you're listening, we'll be more than happy to open the microphone to you to speak to the Isle of Man. And Juwan's with us now. Hello, Juwan.
A day in politics, Andy.
It's the Isle of Man. It never stops, does it?
Well, what can I say? A day in politics. It was only yesterday that we were standing here talking about... Oh, yes, inept government, that's right. Yeah, someone stopped me yesterday afternoon and said, what did you mean about cloud seeding yesterday? And just for people who don't know what that is, cloud seeding is something that higher governments are doing to manipulate weather patterns. I think it's been done, is it, in Dubai and places like that?
Oh, it's been done for years. Apparently the Russian government did it years ago to to facilitate a Paul McCartney concert going on. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. It's never 100% certain. They put certain things into the clouds to either precipitate rain or to stop rain. I think we talked to A.D. Cowan about it a while back. It's a quite inexact science, but the principle's there.
Yes, yeah, and I was just, I had people ask me, have I come on here, and people say, what did you mean by that, or if it was, you know, got in a hurry, and that was what I mean by climate engineering and HAARP and all these other things that are going on. We don't really have a genuine idea of what's happening with the weather because it is being manipulated by certain people. But that's not what I was on about. I was on about the meat plant. And I think it was probably, what, a month ago we were talking about this and I came on and spoke about it. And I was talking to someone who was given a task by government to look at the running of the meat plant some time ago now and was paid good money for doing that. And he told government that it needed reorganisation at an extreme level back then. And what has been done? It doesn't seem that anything's been done. And like I've said before, this is now becoming an important part of the future is our sustainability. And I don't know whether it looks like, I mean, all governments in the world seem to be inept at the moment. I don't know whether that's a mighty big plan to make governments all inept and bring in a one world government. There's a conspiracy theory for you. But they don't seem to be doing very well anywhere at the moment. But the meat plant, and I think Phil Gorn will probably know more about it because I think Phil Gorn was in the meeting, as far as I was told, about subsidising the meat plant. But it's okay throwing money at things. But if it's not being run properly and people are sitting there with sleeping bags and falling asleep and whatever, then it needs sorting out. And I think there's a future there for proper exportation of the flour and the meat and all the things that we do have here. And again, back to my point is what depth of government got to follow this through? What appetite have they got to follow this through?
I think also, Julian, I mean, regarding the meat plant and whether or not you eat meat or not, it would be nice to get some pride in the product. It would be nice to get, you know, people actually wanting to buy Manx meat, the various Manx meats, because sending live animals off the Isle of Man is not really acceptable in this day and age.
No, it's not. But in the bigger scope of things here, the price of meat is going to exponentially go through the roof in the next few years. You've got this here pressure coming on from the leftist green agenda of control of animals and they're culling animals. This is what all the fight is in the Netherlands. I mean, massive riots in the Netherlands from the farmers. If anyone wants to go onto the alternative media and see what's actually happening, because the government's actually telling them to cull their cattle. So, you know, the price of meat is going to go very, very high. And I think the government here should be, you know, they should be capturing in on that, not following this agenda of stopping it, but capturing this agenda and saying, you know, we've got good livestock here, we've got good meat, we've got good traceability, low carbon footprint with it, and we should be they should be turning this around and making a lot of money out of it. The same with the flour. The flour, we've got a high quality flour, and we should be, you know, we should be marketing that to the UK. And in return saying, right, we want X number of thousand loaves a week back to the island and do some kind of deal. You know, we've got the boats for getting it there. I think they're missing a trick.
Well, everybody talks about food security being really important in the future. We've got Manx fish, we've got Manx dairy products, we've got Manx vegetables, we've got Manx grain and flour, and we have Manx meat, and we have the best water in the world. So, you know, what is it that we don't have? We seem to have everything, and surely we should be ring-fencing that for the future, making sure that our well-being is never at risk.
What I think we don't have is what I've said before, is the will of the government here, because I think that they're following bigger agendas. Rather than turning around and securing the Isle of Man and making everything secure for our people, I think they're following bigger agendas. You see it happening in the world all over now. You know, even Aldi's now are doing bags of crickets that you can buy, high-protein cricket, because that's what the big agenda wants us all nibbling on crickets. I'm sure you'd like a cricket instead of your bacon bap in the morning, wouldn't you, Andy? It'd be nice for a chew on a cricket in the morning. And that's what these here lunatics are after, all this here woke leftist agenda. But the Isle of Man doesn't have to follow in this suit. And that's what I keep saying, you know. If we get some politicians who can think outside the box, and I don't know whether they sent all our new potential troublemakers down to Whitehall for a schooling the other week. I seen a picture of Stu Peters and John Wannenberg and Tim Glover and Craig Christian all down at Whitehall. So I don't know whether they sent them down there to get schooled and not to cause any trouble, but it makes you wonder, Andy.
We'll see. Yeah.
It makes you wonder.
Okay, all right, Joan, thanks for calling today.
Cheers, Andy.
Good to hear from you. Just a quick note, by the way, about the Snaefell Summit Cafe. The government had invited expressions of interest from experienced contractors to manage and operate the Snaefell Summit Cafe on behalf of the Department of Infrastructure. And they've extended it, really, now. So it would appear that it's not gone 100%, because the procurement exercise has been extended till March next year, Friday the 18th of March, 5 o'clock on Friday the 18th of March, for the Snaefell Summit Cafe. It was due to be sorted out around now, but it's now 18th of March. So if you want to operate the Snaefell Summit Cafe, the Isle of Man government will be delighted to hear from you. The email address is procurement@gov.im.
Concerned, confused, or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved, and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
Spectrum Window.
Next on the floor, it's Motormall. Can they impress the judges? Oh, great start! £2,000 free finance deposit on selected cars, followed by top part exchange prices. And will you look at that? Buy now and pay nothing for up to 10 months. The crowd are going crazy!
Think you can't afford a new car right now? You can at Motormall with their biggest offer ever. Nothing to pay for up to 10 months.
No need to look at the scores. It's a perfect 10 all this month at Motormall. Cool Road, Braddon.
Instead of driving miles to shop, stay near home and your local ShopRite. Not only will you save on fuel, but with loads of ShopRite's prices matched or cheaper than others, you'll save at the tills too. Plus, you can save up to 35% by swapping from our already low-priced brands to Sainsbury's own label with hundreds of switch and saves. Do the sums. Up to 35% cheaper times how many shopping trips?
Minus all those miles at how much per litre?
ShopRite. Proudly locally owned.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
14 minutes to one. John's with us now. Hi, John.
Oh, faster my Andy. Good to speak to you again. I haven't been on for a while. I'm just listening to Julian earlier. Wind farms, Gordon Bennett. You're saying so many hundred square kilometres are required. You know, the area for a wind farm of similar output is about 40 or 50 times the footprint of a coal powered station, and about 90 or 100 times the footprint of a gas-fired power station, and they need about 9 times the materials, you know, the steel and whatever, once again via a gas-fired power station. They kill birds, bats and insects, and the blades aren't recyclable, and they affect sea travel, as we're now finding. and because they follow a cube law as regards the wind strength, they need about 13 miles an hour to actually start producing anything even remotely useful. And then once you get up to a gale or severe gale, they've got to be turned off because they're to avoid damage. The life is around 15 or 20 years. And then they've got it's all got to be replaced. Whereas a well looked after gas fired station should last at least 30 years.
Do you think these wind farms are going to happen? The Morgan and Morecambe and the Mona ones. Do you think they're going to be pushed through, come what may?
Well, the economic and technical illiterates in the British government are determined to have more wind farms. And so they're making it financially attractive. And of course, all these companies are in who put these things in are in it for the money. And there's lots of money. There's lots of subsidies available and contracts for difference and all these other financial tricks to try and make them even remotely viable. Of course, another thing we've got to bear in mind is Vestas are saying they're going to be. It's too expensive. The energy is too expensive to make these things in Europe. So I should imagine that already most windmills come from China. So we will be aiding the economy of the Chinese communist regime, which largely and these things were largely made by coal power. And there are, of course, these awful reports of forced labour being used to for mining and processing for these things.
Jack, quick question, John. Do you think we'll ever see wind turbines on land on the Isle of Man?
Oh, those people here would love it. They don't, as Julian said. I mean, they don't care about the birds and the bats and the insects, and they're the totems for the new religion. This religion of man-made climate change, for which, of course, there is very little scientific evidence.
Okay. All right, John, we've got a dash, but thanks for calling today. We appreciate that. Do call again. David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Just regarding Rob Collister's sacking, which I was taken back a little bit by that. I had to read your news item twice to make sure that it did exist before I agreed with Facebook that something had happened there. And I just wonder whether, because in the Keys, he did say something like, and when you are appointed a minister, you are responsible for that department. Everything lies on your shoulders. But I just wonder whether it's been an issue within the Council of Ministers, where he's gone against the Council of Ministers on something, or is it because of a little minor thing, like he did say on Tuesday, his words were something like to do with the cannabis registration and it being frustrated through the English government or whatever, we haven't got all our ducks in a row, that he was going to countersign every one of them to get this through and put a promise out there. It was going to happen by the 1st, I think it was something like December.
Yeah. It's never pleasant, and obviously our thoughts are with Mr. Callister, but I mean, you know, he's got big shoulders. I'm sure he'll come back, and I'm sure Mr. Cannon did say that, you know, he'll be back in the fray at some point. But I mean, the invitation's open. Rob Callister was due on Manyline on Monday, and I still hope Rob will come in and have a chat.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I was going to quickly switch to was the meat plant. And when in 2006 or between 2010, I was in Defa. And I'd love you to get on, because I remember Crow, I can't remember his first name now, who is the current chairman.
Graham Crow.
Graham Crow. He's an excellent individual, an excellent farmer. I always found him to be truthful and honest. And it would be nice to get that little bit of balance back in. Whether we like it or not, the taxpayer has to help things out. The flour mill, where's all the flour and all the wheat going to now? Are we exporting it at a profit? The steam packet, we don't have any shares in that. Where's the population getting an investment in that for... It used to make, about 3 or 4 million or whatever
crikey,
more.
It did, yes. I don't think we've seen any books lately.
Well, that's another thing too. Where are the books? And little things like that. But we're not addressing stuff that simply should be addressed. And even the likes of the guys talking about wind turbines on that is, even if we do small amounts, you look at Liverpool there, Heysham there, they've got small turbines that provide 5% of the power that's required for the harbour installation.
Okay.
We're not even doing it.
All right, got to move on. Thanks, David. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Andrew now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you. A very quick one. Douglas Borough Council, Waste Services. I see there's an advert now. They're looking for an assistant waste services manager.
Oh, I saw that.
Recycling. Main purpose of the job. This is an exciting opportunity to join the waste services section as we are looking for a dedicated individual to provide day-to-day supervision and management of the council's refuse and recycling collection operations, ensuring a timely, high-quality, safe, friendly and efficient service to our residents, and to ensure the council fulfils its statutory duty as a waste collection authority. How much do you want for this job? Oh, £39,907 to £46,812. And this is only for the assistant. So, no wonder that everything's in total disarray. There's nobody there to do the job. And some ludicrous amount of money. £40,000 as the assistant.
I take it you're not going to be applying for it then, Andrew.
I'm not going to be applying for it because I don't believe, if they won't go back to the once a week collection, everything worked fine before that. So whoever's in Councillor Falk, and in fact, I'd like Councillor Claire Wells to come on and explain why they're having to have this assistant job at £40,000 a year, but I guess she won't do because she's radio shy.
The invitation is open for Claire Wells to come on Man in Line anytime she wants, Andrew.
Thanking you.
Bye-bye now.
Just take a look at the menu at Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion. Lunch is served 7 days a week, and there's so much choice, whether you fancy a sandwich, a hearty meal, or coffee and homemade cake. Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion is a hidden gem tucked away down at Callow Point, where every visitor will receive a warm welcome, superb quality and great value. For menus and opening times, visit their Facebook or click psmpavilion.im. Time for food, time to visit Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion.
The Queen's Pier Restoration Trust needs you. Our team of volunteers and enthusiasts is working on restoring Ramsay's Pier to preserve its heritage and to make it available to the public once more. But we need new volunteers. Whether you can help with fundraising, admin, marketing, IT, or in a practical hands-on way, we'd love to hear from you. Join the Queen's Pier Restoration Trust volunteers today. Find us on Facebook or email us at qprt@manx.net. This audio has been kindly sponsored by Paul Carey and Sons.
As the nights draw in, tis the season of warm and cosy. Miller Chaps of Ramsey have plump pillows, cushions and throws to bring new textures to your home. Sink into a beautiful new sofa and read in the warm glow of a new lamp, or curl up on a deep pure wool rug as you drink hot chocolate and watch your favourite film. At Miller Chaps, you always find superb quality. So love your home this autumn with treats for you. A host of special offers from Miller Chaps.
Miller Chaps.
A man trap used at Belown House. A conch shell to call the farm workers in for their meals. Maurice Gibbs record player. Museum 100 is a unique new exhibition celebrating 100 years at the Manx Museum, with 100 objects from the beautiful to the offbeat at the Manx Museum in Kingswood Grove, Douglas. Visit manxnationalheritage.im for details.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
That's it for Man in Line today. Lots of comments in. Who would want to take on the Summit Cafe? There's a great one at the bottom anyway. And the Summit Cafe used to be fantastic, didn't it? Do you remember those restaurant dinners they used to do? Take the tram up to the stars. It was a lovely, the mountain railway up to the stars. It was wonderful. Anyway, you have till March to get into it. Regarding vaping, says Kelly, pass all the Isle of Man laws you want, but you won't stop underage children buying vaping online. Well, Kate Law Brennan said they're going to bring in a law regarding under 18 or the purchasing of vapes and vaping equipment for under 18s, but we'll see what happens. But point taken, Kelly, thanks for that. Back tomorrow with another open line on Manx Radio for Man in Line. Thanks to Howie Kane producing today.
WINT.